This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. If there's one thing most Americans would agree on about politics, it is that many of us disagree. Our political system has become polarized. Perhaps it's because of the different media we consume. Perhaps it's because online communities are increasingly politically insulated from one another. Well, whatever the reason, it appears as though we live in increasingly fractured times where the fight between Republicans versus Democrats versus independents is symbolized today by Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton versus Bernie Sanders. Well, my guest thinks we can sort it out if we try. Mark Gerzon is the president of Mediators Foundation. He's a veteran mediator and expert on political bridge building. He wrote the best-selling book, Leading Through Conflict, and he now joins me to discuss his new book, The Reunited States of America, How We Can Bridge the Partisan Divide. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Good to be with you, Sonali. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, I admit this is not a topic that I cover very much on my program, and I'll just lay it out for you. My show is unabashedly progressive. That's how I self-identify. I believe that people in the media should reveal what their own personal political allegiances are. So from my perspective, when I cover the news, I certainly would like to amplify my opinions and the opinions of those people I agree with. And I'm assuming a lot of media who might or might not identify as right-wing media probably do the same. Does that lead to us sort of existing in separate realities?
Well, Sonali, I appreciate your candor, and I have a progressive background myself, but my experience is I don't want to be a prisoner of my preferences. And I think a lot of us have kind of become prisoners. Of course, people on the left like to think people on the right are prisoners of their ideology, but of course people on the right think the people on the left are prisoners. And when I look at it, I think there's some truth to that. So for me, it's not a problem if someone's progressive or conservative. For me, the question is, as a progressive or as a conservative, are you willing to work with people different from yourself to solve the problems that our country faces? That's the question.
So staying on the issue of media for a minute, because that's an important issue to me, one of the things that I often worry about is that those who identify as right-wing or Republican or conservative often get a very distorted perspective, and the media that they consume doesn't necessarily feel that it has to adhere to facts and reality. Fox News, for example, is not available in countries where one needs to make sure that everything one puts out as a news outlet is fact. And in fact, Fox News is just the name. It's really considered an entertainment outlet. That's how it classifies itself on cable. So if people don't even have access to something that can be reliably factual, how does one have a conversation?
Well, it's very hard. And that's why I recommend that people get out of their bias bubble. And the good news I have for you, Sonali, is that in Silicon Valley, there's a startup company called AllSides.com. And your listeners can check it out right now, allsides.com, and it provides the news from a conservative perspective, like Fox, from a mainstream perspective, sort of like I would, you know, like CNN, and then from a progressive perspective, like MSNBC. So you can go to allsides.com, and I encourage your listeners to do that, because I think what you'll find out is that it's not just the right that twists facts, Sonali. The left often twists facts, too. And the experts in the field, like Kathleen Jameson of the University of Pennsylvania, who I quote in my book, she says very clearly, you know, both the parties give you half-truths to make you side with them. And if you listen to the candidates, you'll find a lot of half-truths all across the spectrum, from Bernie Sanders to Donald Trump. There's lots of half-truths because it makes for very effective speech-making.
And it feels like today we're not really split up by the two-party system, because increasingly people have dropped out of the two-party system, and it's a lot of independents that have been drawn to, at least those who identify as progressive independents, have drawn to Bernie Sanders. And I really see it as the Democrats, the Republicans, and those independents who are voting Democrat because they want to vote for Bernie Sanders. And there might be even a fourth a group in the United States of conservatives who don't feel Donald Trump represents them, but who don't have a candidate in the race. And it feels like there is really more of a spectrum than there is a two-party divide. Does acknowledging that provide a good starting point?
I agree with you completely, Sonali. In fact, I wrote a book. The book that led to my work with the United States Congress was a book about the six belief systems that are struggling for America's soul. It was called A House Divided, and it was what led to my becoming the designer of the retreats for the U.S. Congress. And I think you're right. I wrote The Six Belief Systems Struggling for America's Soul because we're not a two, there's not two kinds of Americans, liberals and conservatives. That's crazy, you know? It's crazy to think there's two kinds of Americans. I mean, I have more different kinds of people in my family than that, you know, who have different points of view. So I agree with you completely. To say that we are either on the right or the left is a charade that we are, it's a trance that we are put in by the media to make us oppose each other. And when you strip away the surface, you find out people are much more subtle than that. I have conservative views about some things, and I have liberal views about other things, and that's true for almost everyone.
So let's talk about your book. Tell me about the people that you spoke with and the organizations that you became familiar with as you wrote this book, people who did want to actually make some progress, because certainly in Congress we have had for many years the word is gridlock, and we tend to not get anything done. And, you know, from a progressive's perspective, it's all the Republicans' fault because they try to oppose President Obama at every point, even when he puts forward policies that they had agreed with just a few years ago.
That's right. That's right. Well, I wrote the book, The Reunited States of America, because I didn't do it to make money. I did it to basically cheer myself up. Because I was getting pretty depressed by what was happening in our politics. And it was 2015 when I started the book. And I said to everybody, 2016 is going to be the most toxic election we've ever seen. And it is. And I wrote The Reunited States of America because I wanted to surround myself with my heroes. And if one reads The Reunited States of America, you'll meet 40, 50 different people who are basically my heroes. They're people who might be progressive or might be conservative, but they're all crossing the divide. They're bridge builders. And I think the United States of America depends on bridge builders. You know, that's what keeps us the United States as opposed to the divided states. So I mentioned one of them already, John Gable, the CEO of AllSides.com. But I mentioned scores of organizations, many of which probably your listeners have never heard of. You may have heard of No Labels, that's bringing Congress together. But a lot of people haven't heard of Living Room Conversations or the Public Conversations Project or a host of other organizations that I profile. And I did it because I think bridge builders are the real patriots. I think they're the real patriots. And I resent when one political point of view tries to wrap itself in the flag, because I don't think America's about one point of view. I think it's about being a free place for lots of points of view.
And of course, the wrapping in the flag is a common tactic for our elected officials, politicians in particular. Are you disappointed by how little bridge building desire there exists among our current politicians, particularly our federally elected politicians in Washington?
I'm very disappointed. And when I put the subtitle of my book, How We Can Bridge the Partisan Divide, by we, I mean, you know, you and me and the people listening to this program. Whether the politicians will bridge the partisan divide, I don't think that's where it's going to start. I think it's going to start with us. And in every culture, Sonali, where there's been a transformation, whether it's Arab Spring or the countries that revolted against the former Soviet Union, or any country that's kind of reasserted its freedom, every country, it starts in the culture. It doesn't start in politics. It starts in the arts and music and entertainment and literature and schools and education and startup companies and nonprofits, in the independent sector. That's where new ideas come from. And I think that's what's happening in our culture. And I think my book, The Reunited States of America, is part of that cultural movement that says, and by the way, the millennials, I hope there are a lot of millennials listening to your program, because the millennial generation is by far and away the leader of this. I mean, in my generation, 40%, 42% say they're independents. In the millennial generation, it's 55 to 60% who say they're independents. So more than half have already said, hey, I may be progressive, I may be conservative, but don't you dare try to push me into a Democratic or Republican box. I won't do it. I'm a free person. I can listen to what I want on the internet. I don't need to buy the album. I just need to buy the song. You
know? Okay, so Mark, take us through the motions of how you would advise groups that have decided, or individuals that have decided they do want to make progress on certain issues, how they can come together. Because there's certainly lots of issues on which independents, progressives, conservatives disagree. But every now and then there are issues on which people do agree. Issues, for example, like climate change. There are plenty of denialists among conservatives, but certainly among ordinary Republicans, we know ordinary rank and file Republicans, it's a real issue for them. How would people work together? And is it a matter of compromising or coming together and finding middle ground and say, okay, I'll let go of this if you let go of that?
Well, the first starting point, and it's the reason I made it the first chapter of my book, asks the question if we think as citizens we're supposed to have the right answer and be know-it-alls, or if we think as citizens we're supposed to be learners. And I take the perspective, based on the founding fathers, that we're supposed to be learners. So take the issue that you mentioned, Sonali, climate change. You know, what was the founding fathers' view of climate change? What does it say in the Constitution or the Bill of Rights about climate change? Well, it doesn't say a single word. And it doesn't say anything in the Constitution about internet privacy. It doesn't say anything about fighting international terrorism. It doesn't say anything about outsourcing jobs to China. It doesn't say anything about most of the issues we're dealing with. And I think that's, to me, a sign that says, you know, that Thomas Jefferson was right. He said every generation has to reinvent democracy. So if a group wants to talk about climate change, the first thing I say to them when I bring them into the room from across the spectrum, and I've done that with Al Gore when he was working on An Inconvenient Truth, and I've done that with, brought him together with the people who took out the attack ads against An Inconvenient Truth. And what we did was we said, let's learn together. You know, let's listen to each other's point of view and learn from each other. And we did. So that's the first point is, are you in the room to learn? If you're not in the room to learn, if you're just there to preach, then, you know, obviously you're stuck. You know, that's what I mean by being in a prison. So the first step to answer your question, Sonali, is let's learn together. And I think that's what launches us on the path to finding common ground.
And then there are lots of other issues that seem to be so emotionally charged that we might never make progress on them. I'm thinking of abortion. I'm thinking of gun control. And often these things get wrapped up in the flag, the Constitution, or God and religion. Are there certain issues that you feel, all right, we just have to agree to disagree and we'll never make progress on them?
Well, I'll tell you, when I'm in the Middle East, I get that feeling sometimes. When I'm in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which has been going on for 50 years, I sometimes have that feeling of, I don't know how we're going to resolve this, because every piece of land, every inch of land at the moment either belongs to Israel or it belongs to Palestine. And very hard to find a win-win. But on the issues you mentioned, including guns, I think there's lots of common ground. And what I do, Sonali, when I have very pro-gun and very anti-gun people on a radio show or in my room, again, I start with learning. And I ask the pro-gun and the anti-gun person, what are your positions? And when they tell me their positions, you know, the pro-gun person is basically, hey, let's have guns everywhere. The more guns there are, the better, the safer we'll be. And the anti-gun position is basically, let's get rid of all guns if we possibly can. And it could be like Scandinavia and some of the Baltic countries that have, you know, have no guns, and even their police sometimes don't have guns. Those are the two starting positions. And obviously, you know, it looks like there's no common ground. But what I'll say to those antagonists, I'll say, could you for a moment imagine that your children go to the same school? And tomorrow, they're going to be entering the same elementary school, like in Sandy Hook, Connecticut. They're going to be entering the same elementary school. Are you willing to sit together to make sure that that school is safe for your kids? And are you willing to sit down, since they go to the same school, and work through your differences, so tomorrow your kids will be safer than they are today?
So you make it personal.
And if those two people say, no way, I'm not going to sit down with them. I mean, we disagree. I'm not sitting down. Then I say, well, that's your right. But your kids are not going to be safer tomorrow than they are today. And basically what you're telling me is you're more interested in being right than solving the problem, which is your kids' safety. So usually when I talk to people like that, suddenly they'll say, well, oh, okay, I'll sit down and we'll talk. And once they'll start talking about making the school safer for their kids, even if it's imaginary, they start getting down to some basics, which is, you know, and I've studied this very closely, having guns in the hands of every teacher, in every desk, in every administrator, and every bus driver, and every person who's watching them on the playground, having that many guns in a school doesn't make kids safer. And all you have to do is look at the accident statistics. But on the other hand, having no protection whatsoever on school grounds or near school grounds, if a crazy person comes into a school, doesn't make the kids safer either. It's just like Sandy Hook. So to me, it's an opportunity for learning. You know, it's an opportunity for learning. How do we make our kids' school safer? And I believe that's the kind of problem solving that leads people to getting a little more humble and a little more willing to learn, which again is what Thomas Jefferson said. That's what he said. You got to reinvent democracy. You can't just slap the Second Amendment on every issue and say that's the answer, or slap the Bible on every issue and say that's the answer, or slap the Constitution on every issue. It's just not possible anymore because the world is changing.
So, Mark, if I were in this conversation around gun control, and I cited the statistics, what happens if the other person says those statistics are just not true? It, you know, here's one story, and they might cite, you know, their own source that shows it's actually safer when lots of people have guns, even if we, most of us know, that can't possibly be a true fact.
Well, I can tell you a story about how I approached that. I mean, this is what happened when I worked with Congress suddenly. This was before I wrote the Reunited States of America, and before I'd learned all the things I've learned today. But what I learned back then in the early 2000s, when I would take chiefs of staff from the House and Senate off to retreats for learning dialogue and dialogue on issues, they would start to argue about the facts. And I would say, well, I would push the pause button. And I would say, wow, you know, it sounds like you have one set of facts, for example, about how to stimulate the economy when it's the economy's, you know, sluggish. I said to the Democrats, well, you have one set of facts. You want to give, you know, increase unemployment benefits and give more money to the poor and stimulate the economy that way. And you Republicans, you want to stimulate the economy by giving more to big business and so that they'll hire more people and create more jobs. I said, sounds to me like you need a fact-finding group that studies the data together. How in the past, when we've stimulated the economy, how did it work? And in countries where they have effectively stimulated the economy, or in America, how did we stimulate the economy? And are you willing to put together that fact-finding committee? And usually they'll say, well, okay, you know, we'll put it together. And once you do that, they're learning together. And then that committee reports back about what they've learned about how to stimulate the economy. So if they're willing to form that committee, suddenly you have hope. If they say, no way, I'm not going to sit down on that, I have the right facts already, and I don't want to learn anything, they're wrong and I'm right, and that's the end of it, then you're right. Then they're stuck. Then they're what I call prisoners. They're prisoners of their beliefs.
I'm speaking with Mark Gerzon about his book, The Reunited States of America, How We Can Bridge the Partisan Divide. So much more to talk about on our program, Rising Up with Sonali. We're going to keep Mark on for an extended conversation, which you can find on our website at risingupwithsonali.com in the premium content section. Okay, so Mark, it seems as though one of the most problematic issues that we come across in our political space is that the people who benefit most from partisanship, from polarization, from refusing to move forward and actually find facts that we agree on, are politicians, because we have a political system that's kind of set up on whipping up frenzy, whipping up support. Politicians are constantly raising money, constantly feeling like they have to run for re-election. Is that a part of the reason why we have this polarization?
Yeah, but politicians are in a system, Sonali, where what I learned is that when they go off to do some fact-finding and the folks come back to Capitol Hill and say, here is the facts we found together, working together as Democrats and Republicans, and here's the new ideas that our committees come up with, what I've learned is that the party leaders will say, sorry, we're not interested. Well, why aren't they interested in solutions? Why aren't they interested in innovations? Because they're not interested in solving the problem. They're interested in using the legislation to get an advantage over the other party so they can position themselves in the next election more successfully. So they're not in the problem-solving business. They're in the getting reelected business. And so that creates a disincentive for real creative work. And that's the problem we face as a country. And that's why the American people, the folks listening to your program, are so important. Because we have to start telling our representatives, we actually are going to vote for people who solve problems. We're not going to vote for people who are hardline right or hardline left. And all they do is go there to blame the other side and work for their reelection. I talk in my book, Sonali, about what I call endless campaigning.
Right.
We have endless campaigning now that never stops. And what that means is that governing never begins.
I mean, and I want to just point out, I don't think there's anybody or that many people that you could characterize as hardline left in our Congress. We have a lot of centrist folks, and we have a lot of right-leaning folks, and we've got a lot of hardline right-wing folks, as evidenced by Donald Trump and the people who are willing to support him. But we don't have that many hardline left folks. One might even characterize Bernie Sanders as hardline left, but on many issues, he isn't even that, say, even on, say, foreign policy, which is really interesting to me. From my perspective, it looks like we're skewing, our politics are skewing rightwards and rightwards and rightwards. However, I'm sure there's a Tea Party Republican somewhere who thinks it's the other way around. And then we feel like we're right back where we started.
You're absolutely right, Sonali, and I love the way you ended your comment, because that's exactly right. They think the whole thing is tilted leftward. They think that since Bill Clinton, everything is tilted leftward, and they think Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders are this huge leftward swing in America that they have to resist. And you'll see that now. I mean, we have a...
I mean, Ronald Reagan is left compared to where, some of the Republicans are today.
Well, Sonali, I happen to agree with you.
Okay.
I happen to agree with you, but I'm saying there are a lot of people who... There's a lot of people who don't. And
yeah.
I think what we've done is we've touched into a really rich vein of conversation, Sonali. And what I would suggest is that I would love to visit with you again after the conventions, when all the distractions are gone and we have two candidates. And I'd love to have this conversation part two with you and see where it leads, because I think at that point we can really go further and say, how could these two candidates, practically speaking, now that the conventions are over and the election itself is 3 months away, how could these two candidates have a breakthrough? And
right.
I have lots of ideas about that, which I'd love to discuss with you.
Let's make it happen. Okay, so I have one last question, which I think is really important, which is, tell us a story or two of how young people, independents, organizations used the method that you've described in your book, and you started out talking about how the first major step is agreeing that you want to learn. What are some successes, some success stories that have come out of trying to bridge the partisan divide?
Well, my friend Joan Blades, who started Living Room Conversations, did some Living Room Conversations on prison reform. And she did Living Room Conversations with people on the left and people on the right. She started talking to people on the left and on the right, including our colleague Grover Norquist, who some people call the leading conservative in America. And to make a long story short, there is now a criminal justice reform movement that goes all the way from the Koch brothers on the right to progressives like Bernie Sanders on the left, who are saying we need to reform our criminal justice system, and the time to do it is now. So that's a very positive success story, and I encourage you and your listeners to follow it, because it's going to really hit big this year, and we'll see that it's one of the ways in which we can work together. It's been a very great pleasure working with you, Sonali, and I look forward to being on your show again. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mark Gerzon is my guest. We're talking about his book, The Reunited States of America, How We Can Bridge the Partisan Divide. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.